I need you to knock some sense into me. I'm sure you can.
Yeah, I don't know.
I enjoy listening to you. I don't always agree with everything.
All right. Enough of this persiflage.
So, you want my question?
I'm certainly not going to get myself in trouble by telling you what to do.
That makes great sense. Gosh, that's good.
That I overwhelm you with words and wisdom?
I've got 7 kids. I feel like I could call you every day.
Wait, you're telling me I'm wrong?
Yes, I am, Dr. Ray.
You just need to tune in to Dr. Ray, honey. He's got all the answers.
Am I right or am I right?
Probably.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
You can't worry what you look like in social situations. For example, I've learned to do this when I'm at a restaurant. Now, I don't drink, but every once in a while I have a little glass of wine. I'm Italian. By law, I think you have to have at least 2 glasses of wine as an Italian per year. So I just simply say to the server, I would please like a glass of red wine, and I will take the cheapest one you have because I can't tell the difference. I'm amazed at these people who go, yeah, I don't really kind of like that wine because it seems to have a taste that I'm thinking to myself, how can you tell that? Or they sniff it, or they swish it around, and that's supposed to be a good thing when you swish it around because it does something to the wine. And I just look at it, and I go, I'll just pick it out of the box. Yeah, let me know. Nice to have you here, Dr. Ray Guarendi. This is The Doctor Is In, and the variant is E-Person Monday. I got these stack of E-Persons sitting in front of me. I printed them out at the behest of Andrew Krucek, my producer man, and Eric Dumont, because several things happen when I leave them on the phone. One, if somebody calls, usually a spam call, while I'm reading it, of course, it kicks me out of the email. And then I have to go find it again. And then sometimes it says things like, this message has not been downloaded from the server. And I say, but I downloaded it and read it before, and now I can't now. And my iPhone 3 is giggling at me. So I printed them out, so I got them sitting in front of me, and I will get to these. All right. Some good religious news. There's a study that found among British members of Gen Z. Now, as I understand Gen Z, that's, up to age 27? I don't know, 17, 27, somewhere in there. It's in the 20s. Catholics now outnumber Anglicans. Now, keep in mind, the Anglican religion was the basically state-related religion of the United Kingdom. Catholics now outnumber Anglicans in the United Kingdom 2-1. Catholicism is growing. Anglicanism is declining. Now, let me stop for a second, because I think people want the real thing. If it is a mainline who has cooperated with the cultural's moral perspective, whereas the Catholic Church says this is the truth given to us from Jesus Christ and it's not alterable, there's something about that. This report came from the Bible Society, and it found that, in general, Christianity is growing in the United Kingdom after decades of decline. The old idea that, well, they're all going to become agnostic and atheists. Well, that's not happening because it's apparently somewhat bottomed out and is bouncing up. Quote, over the space of only 6 years, there has been a significant growth in the numbers of people going to church. Christians are practicing their religion more intentionally, which means I want to live it. More young people are finding faith, and more people are reading the Bible. End quote. From the Bible study report. Now here is, you think to yourself, well, you know, it's the old people. They're deciding, they're hearing a waterfall, and they've decided they better start thinking about the hereafter because they're getting close. So that's what's happening. That's what's driving it, right? No, exactly the opposite. The youngest group studied, 18 to 24-year-olds, 16% of them say they are monthly churchgoers. Now, that means probably monthly or more, but at least monthly. Well, Dr. Ray, come on. Come on, monthly. If you're Catholic, it's weekly. I got that part, but baby steps. Now, who is the second group? Well, it still is those over 65. However, 19% of those over 65 attend, 16 of the 18 to 24-year-olds. Listen to this one. This is not what you'd expect. Because if you look at the older age group, it is more women in church than men. And it isn't because the guys are all dying off. We're talking about middle age. 21% of men in the younger group attend church at least monthly. Their female peers, 12%. So the guys are outnumbering the women almost 2-1 in attending church. Why is this? What is this? What's going on? What is it about the male psyche that seems to embrace this religion? Father Robert Spitzer offered a perspective on this. I heard him say it once on Father Spitzer's Universe, and I tease him. I said, you know, that's kind of self-promoting, isn't it, Father Spitzer's Universe? I mean, I could see you saying Father Spitzer's Galaxy, or even Solar System, Father Spitzer's Solar System, but Universe? Whoa! He laughs. He's got that infectious laugh. Why men? He said this. He said that in some respects, he thinks guys approach it a little more linearly, logically. You know, what's the evidence for this? As opposed to a more emotional experience. And the evidence is becoming very strong. Scientifically, miraculously, regarding things like Fatima, Lourdes, Eucharistic miracles, the Shroud. Just science in general. Let me just stop here for a second. They did a survey of self-proclaimed scientists. And they found that among those under 50, something like 56% proclaimed a belief in God. Over 50 was less than that, much less than that. Father Spitzer made the observation that as science is becoming more and more understood, not scientism, that's a philosophy, science itself, it's pointing to God, very strongly pointing toward a creator, somebody putting this universe into motion with infinitesimally unlikely chances that it could happen just at random. The universe isn't old enough. Little digression there. Among those 18 to 24-year-olds, only 20% identify as Anglican. Now, that's down from 30% 7 years ago. 41% identify as Catholic. In the words of Roy Hobbs, The Natural, from the movie The Natural, when he called timeout from right field in a playoff game and he ran in and he knew the pitcher had been bought off and he was going to throw a gopher ball and throw the game, Hobbs said, "Bobby, give him the real stuff." And I think that is what the younger people are telling us. They want the real stuff. Now, piggybacking on this, go over to France. 17,800 French were baptized into the Catholic Church during this past year's Easter Vigil. That's a record. That's a record. Adult baptisms have increased 45% compared to 1 year ago. That's the highest figure since the creation of the survey in 2002. It is not a passing trend, but a real dynamic, said Archbishop Olive. I'm going to pronounce this correctly, I hope, Olivier de Germay of Lyon, and a, quote, sign from heaven. Over the past decade, the number of adults baptized at Easter has risen from 3,900 in 2015 to nearly 10,400. Quote, requests are pouring in, said Cécile Aon, a national delegate for the adult catechumenate. 18 to 25-year-olds now represent 42% of the catechumens and have surpassed the 26 to 40-year-old group. Now, I think this is very significant, because one speculation on this is because they've tried the secular ways and found them seriously wanting, badly wanting. What is an alternative that not only works for this life, but promises something infinitely valuable in the next? And here's the quote. This guy is, pronouncing it Hubert Bayon. He's responsible for catechumens at the Cathedral of St. Louis in Versailles. Quote, in 80% of the cases, the catechumenates come from broken families with parents who have abandoned the faith. In other words, these were not folks who said they were raised in the faith, and then they said, oh, well, I get a little more mature, I'll come back. These are folks who said, I have seen what a lack of faith can do in life. I want no part of that. Let me look at something more substantive. Now, critical point. And I speak to you grandparents on this. This is huge, because you grandparents say, how can I do this? How can I lead my grandkids to the faith? Or how can I help my grandkids see the faith? What can I do? What can I say? Here's what the catechumens mentioned. Many mention their grandmother and say they remember her going to Mass. So you see, that nonverbal vibe that you give off, living your faith, just know somebody's watching. Dr. Ray.
We'll return after these messages.
The doctor is in Ann Arbor. Don't miss this chance to join Dr. Ray's studio audience for tapings of his hit TV show, Living Right with Dr. Ray.
The live audience makes the show.
The tapings are October 28th and 29th. Two shows each night at 5:30 and 7:15 p.m. All shows are at Russell Video in Ann Arbor, and the cost is free.
Without the audience, there is no show.
Just sign up at AveMariaRadio.net.
Very much would love to see you.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
This week on Christ is the Answer, we continue Father John's RCIA for Catholics series. Over the years of pastoring a church, Father John noticed that converts to Catholicism almost always seemed to know their newly found faith much better than their cradle Catholic brothers and sisters. So he put together an RCIA for Catholics series. Join us this week as Father John talks about Luke 11:1 and how to pray like Jesus taught. Tune in for Christ is the Answer Monday through Fridays at 11 a.m. on Ave Maria Radio.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at AveMaria.com. That's AveMaria.com.
Big screen radio, high definition radio. Pulchritudinous, mellifluous, pugnacious, abstitious. That's about as high definition as you're going to get. E-Person Monday. Hello, Dr. Ray. My wife and I have been married for almost 29 years. Out of the blue, an old live-in boyfriend, she said that she lived with for about 6 months and told me that he had left bruises on her and other things. And all that he did. One time he dragged her while holding her special needs son in her arms and threw them both in the front yard. Now he pops up and wants to apologize. She told him there was no reason for him to apologize. My wife and I had a few words about this. She did rewrite how he hurt her. But if he didn't, she wouldn't have found me. Okay, she told him again that he hurt her, but had he not done this, she would not be with her husband now and, of course, with the 9 children. After she said she was married with 9 kids, he didn't answer for about a month. Okay, I can't totally speculate, but if I were asked to speculate, I would say, whoa! Okay, she's pretty rooted in her present life. She was liking his posts. I told her how I felt about her being so nice and wanting to be friends with him. She told me I should be friends with him. And that I was making a big deal over nothing. Stop there. My guess would be, if you polled 100 spouses in solid marriages, well over 90 would say, this is real uncomfortable here. Having an ongoing contact with an ex-boyfriend, girlfriend. Real uncomfortable, and it's risky and it's dangerous. It's not good. It's unpredictable. And the question becomes, why? What is this about? Now, that said, if this writer is asking, am I feeling normal about this? Well, if you define normal by the numbers, yeah, you're feeling pretty normal. That's not the question. I think you need to find out what it is that your wife thinks this is no big deal. What it is that she still wishes to have contact. Why would that be? Is it because she's got 9 kids, she's tired, she's exhausted, and the relationship she had with him was so fiery, but yet at the same time, she was single and it was pretty exciting. Who knows? But I see that a lot. I'm not saying that's the case here, but I do see that a lot with old boyfriends, old girlfriends, especially when... This is kind of like, again, I cut myself off in the middle of a sentence, which my wife says I do sometimes. It's kind of like those Hallmark movies where they have the same repetitive plot. The woman is engaged to some guy, or she's going to marry some guy who's stable but boring. And then coming into town is the free spirit guy. The one who wants to start his own chef school and get things going. And she doesn't like him at all initially because he's just rootless. That's it. Not ruthless. Rootless. But then, by the end, she breaks her engagement with the staid boyfriend and she hooks up with this guy. Now, and I'll tell you what. Do any of you know anybody when you've had someone go to their family, not family, high school reunion, meet up with an old boyfriend or girlfriend, that they had a 2-year relationship with, which broke up for various reasons. And then it's kind of exciting again, you know, because you look back on it like, wow. I mean, the intensity of feelings I had then for this relationship was so strong, even though intellectually they might have known why it broke up. The quote-unquote passion of the relationship in youth is something that they would wish to recover now that they've been married 30 years and they've settled into this routine. Just some speculation. On with the letter. Then his mother died last Wednesday, and he was asking her to the funeral. And she wanted me to take off work to go with her. My wife said she really wanted to talk to his sister. I've never heard anything about his sister till now. I told her I would go to the viewing with her, but I wasn't going to the funeral. And I think she's going to go without me. Am I making a big deal over nothing? Or am I in the right saying she shouldn't go without me and she shouldn't be following him on Facebook and talking to him on Messenger and being friends with him? When I asked her why she wants to be friends with someone who hurt her so much, and again, this is, okay, here's what it says here. All she say to hurt me with the stuff you say. I'm not sure exactly that sentence. It looks like it was talk to text, and the old text didn't understand it. What it seems like is she didn't really give him an answer. The question is not, is he right? The question is, what is going on? There's something that is making her pursue some kind of ongoing contact. What's the marriage like? What is her frustration with being a mother of nine and feeling, this is it, I'm tired, I'm feeling old, you know, that relationship was when I was single, and gosh, you know, there's still residual feelings left over. I got to wonder where that's percolating, and I think, again, this is dangerous, but if she refuses to say, this is not healthy, this is risky. If she refuses, if she simply says, no, I'm going to keep up this relationship, this contact. He's really helpless. He's got no choice. He can hope that ultimately she realizes this is a dangerous path. This is not a benign situation. I mean, he approached her, he contacted her. After he got over the idea that she's a mom with nine kids, he made another run at it. Dad can hope, husband can hope, that she realizes this is where her life is and not back there. Or that she sees that this guy is still reasonably the same person he was. He didn't grow up that much. If he only wanted to apologize for the way he treated her, he could have done that. He could have just said, well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for the way I treated you. But I can't help but thinking there's something attracting her here. And as much as she may try to say it's benign, I would suggest to her husband that he explore it with her and get whatever understanding he can regarding this. And then realize that if she's going to refuse, whew, I'm hoping that it ultimately burns itself out. Thank you for joining me, Dr. Ray Durandy here. The program The Doctor is In, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. This is the generally Monday variant, E-Person Monday, as I work my way through the E-Persons that come from you, oftentimes through the radio program and the TV program, Living Right with Dr. Ray. My producer at one point during the program, and a little drop-in says, we would like to hear from you. Send your questions and comments, too. And I think that's where some of these come from, because here and there where I say, if you can call the radio program, I can ask some questions. Not often, but I have heard people say, what radio program? So they're familiar with the TV program, but not the radio program. And I say, you're my wife, you should know this. Okay. Good evening. Well, that's interesting. Apparently, this appellation is from when he was writing it, not when I'm reading it. My wife and I have 5 children, ages 6 months to 8 years old. Okay, that's pretty tightly packed. It feels as if we are at an extremely difficult season of life. Well, I would want to know why that is. Obviously, 5 kids under 8, a lot of activity, a lot of potential chaos. But I will tell you this, the number one reason we have a whole bunch of little kids who are feeling frustrated is discipline. It is discipline. They can't get order because potentially anything can become a battle. I work for the electric company. I work shift work with a good amount of overtime. Our 3-year-old son has by far been our most testing child and at times makes us feel extremely overwhelmed and distraught. You going to have 5 kids? Chances are you're going to have one that's going to push harder than anybody else by a factor of 10. That's the way it is. My most challenging child when he was little is now a son who absolutely loves the faith and adores his mother. You never know. So given that, when a kid is 3, they have no impulse control. They're completely self-centered. They want what they want the moment they want it. You're in the way. Anything can become a contest of wills. The experts talk about don't exert your will over the child. Respect his will. Yeah. Well, these experts probably don't have 3-year-olds because if they do, by the time the kid's 9, they're seeking therapy because the kid has just become so totally obnoxious. Yes, you do assert your will. Now, here's where the letter goes on. This is how they paraphrase will. We try to be more stubborn than he is. But we are clearly not winning. Okay, Dad, wait a minute now. When you are clearly not winning over a 3-year-old, here's what you're saying. The kid is operating by no rules. He does what he wants, when he wants it. He melts down, he throws fits, he's defiant, he's argumentative, whatever it is. If you attempt to, quote-unquote, and I use this word delicately, battle him at his level, you are going to lose. He's not playing by any rules. You can win because you control everything. You control everything. When he's defiant or nasty or difficult, what are you going to do about it? Not what are you going to say about it. Not what are you going to argue with him about it. Not what are you going to negotiate with him about it. Not what are you going to try to distract him about it. Not what are you going to try to give him choices about it. What time? Not what are you going to give iMessages about it. What are you going to do about it? Now, the problem here is that I would say about half of the parents I deal with, good people, if I said to them, would he go and sit on the steps if you told him just once because of what he did? At least half say no. What? Well, you can't do that. You're in big trouble. Because you are helpless in the face of his intensity. But Dr. Ray, how do we get that? Well, I've talked about it so many times. Some parents will give him a crack in the bottom. I don't have any problem with that. And there's no research that says that's a problem in a loving home. None. Oh, there's a lot of surveys, but those surveys have a lot of question marks and flaws. Actual research? No. But that said, all I got to do is just simply deny everything he asks for and remind him he hasn't gone to the steps yet. He'll find out that you don't have to battle with him. Okay, now here's where it kind of hits the wall. Between him getting into things, yelling constantly, hitting walls, unbuckling his car seat, we are at a loss. Well, yeah, because you need to be able to immediately, anytime, anywhere, say, go to the corner, please. Or you don't have this anymore because you threw it. Or you're not getting dessert because of the way you acted at the table. Or there's donuts after church, but you don't get one because you didn't cooperate in church. You can do all this. But Dr. Ray, it doesn't do any good. We do that. No, you don't. Parents say, why do I say this? Because every parent I've talked to in therapy, when I ask them about these things, they say, we do this. And then I explore it and I find out they're doing it about 10% of the time. Not that they're bad people. It's just you get pulled into debating and arguing with a three-year-old. Okay. About 4 years ago, and this is the crux of the you know what? I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to leave this. I'm looking at the clock, and I got about 1 minute before the music starts. So let me backtrack here just to say a couple more things. No matter how tough a three-year-old is, no matter how defiant, no matter how obnoxious, as a parent, you control everything. We had 10 kids under 12. My kids are all adopted, and some of them have had the absolute most wretched histories. Crack prostitute, birth moms. Absolutely. My wife always had the ability, by the time they were 3 years old, to say, go sit on the couch, go lay on your bed, stand in the corner, put your head down at the table. Give me that, please. She had that ability. How'd she do it? Because she showed him. She showed him, if you don't, here's what I'm going to do. You're not getting your stuffed animal. You're not getting your favorite shirt. You're not getting that toy. It's not happening. And plus, one of the really neat things is when you got 10 kids under 12, when that one child watches the other 11 get something that he doesn't get, oh, that's potent. That is real potent. All right, I'll talk to the second part of this e-person when I come back. Very nice to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In. Okay, on this e-person Monday, I did half of the e-person. To quick summarize, 5 kids, 6 months to 8 years. 3-year-old is giving them the most trouble. Pushing, testing, yelling, buckling his car seat, etc., etc., etc. And I talked about some ways to take control of the situation. But here is the spillover. About 4 years ago, this is Dad writing this, I felt God placed on my heart the need to be open to a large family. At that time, I was not so open. Okay, now this is the old second guessing, because I thought, okay, let's welcome children. There are blessings for God. And then you run into these discipline walls. Sometimes I feel so foolish thinking I am being open to God's will. Let me stop right there and let me interrupt. Unspoken? Okay, the youngest is 6 months. What if we have 2 or 3 more? Can't handle the 5 I have. But yet, back to his words, seem to be so out of control within our family life. When you have a loving home with a solid marriage and you got several kids, and the parent says, we feel out of control. Our family life feels out of control. The main factor by far is discipline. Now, most of the folks who come in my office in situations like that, they don't understand this because they think they're doing all the things that should work. They don't understand it. They think they've got this little Chucky, this Damien, this Cujo that nobody on God's green earth could handle. And yeah, he may be tougher than the other kids. Okay, got that. They all vary. But almost always, there are ways that we analyze and explore and assess and tweak their discipline approach that makes it dramatically better. Yeah, the kid may still push like crazy, but he doesn't have the ability to throw the whole family into chaos and thus to make the parents feel totally inept and failures. So there. Let me interrupt myself for a second. When the kids were little like that, when we had 10 under 12 or 10 under 13 or 10 under 14, my wife had the ability, especially for the younger ones, to say, okay, everybody get a book, find a place to sit, read it or look at it. She could do that at any time. Do you realize what that does? To pull the plug on chaos? How did she get that? Because parents will say, well, I couldn't do that. Well, no, because the kids knew what was going to happen to them. They were going to lose the next 10 privileges if they didn't do that. And they only had to lose those privileges a couple of times before they realized when mom says, get a book and sit down, I better. They're not dumb. Okay, I'll give you one more. I'll just give you one more real quick. And then we'll get to dad here. The kids were fighting over cereal. Battling it out. A couple, three of them grabbing it. And you know how they do that. And then you got 9 more flakes than I did. Out come the calipers and the digital scale. And, of course, somebody yanked the box. It went all over the floor. All right. So they had to clean it up. Now, for most parents, that would be enough. They'd say, well, what'd you do as discipline? I made them clean it up. Okay, that's a first step. My wife just quietly, when they went shopping next time, she had all the kids with her because I was out talking about parenting. She only put cornflakes in the cart for the next several months. Do you think they fought about breakfast cereal after that? I did. I said, honey, I'll give you $50. $50 if you just get me one box of Golden Grahams, one box of Fruity Pebbles. Come on. That's what I mean in setting the terms. So here's what Dad says. About 4 years ago, I felt God place in my heart the need to be open to a large family. At that time, I was not so open. Sometimes I now feel so foolish, thinking I'm open to God's will, but I'm so out of control with our family. Oh, within our family. Okay. But things seem to be. I don't want to place that this dad is out of control. We attend church every Sunday with the whole family. We try diligently to say prayers at meals before bed. I've even backed off overtime at work to be home more. Well, Dad, the thing about you being home more may or may not be as helpful as you think, because if you can't be the discipline force, then you're as frustrated as mom is. So you got two parents being frustrated. Be one thing if your wife felt frustrated, but you could step in and pull the plug with that 3-year-old and say, I'm putting you in your bed, and you better stay there. Because if you get out of your bed, son, everything you ask for is going to be no. He knows that. I remember one time my 4-year-old son, we had just adopted him. He was just out of control. He had been without limits for 2.5 years. And bedtime was horrid. They couldn't get him to cooperate at bedtime. So first weekend visit to our house, and we'd already visited at their house many times. He knew I was going to be daddy. He refused to go to bed. So I just picked him up. I put him in bed. I held him in bed. And he could tell by my grip, you're not getting up. I said, you got to stay here, son. That's it. I'm not letting you move until I decide you're going to stay. And he saw in me, this is a different situation. This guy really looks like he means it. That was it. No more bedtimes after that. No more bedtime bad times. Because John knew. He just looked at me and he saw that Daddy was going to do this again. And he didn't like that the first time around. I didn't hurt him. But it was real clear. He was going to stay there. I couldn't let him rent the house. He was dangerous. We had six kids under six at that time. He was four. His perception was, the man acts with authority. He loves me. He kisses me. He kissed me goodnight. He hugs me. Says prayers with me. But he don't let me get out of bed. Any advice or thoughts would be wonderfully appreciated. Keep us in your prayers. Then mentioned his and his wife's name. Okay. I just gave you about 6 or 7 minutes of a few thoughts. I've got a book called Discipline That Lasts a Lifetime. It is my bestseller, by far. Of all the books I've written, that one still continues to sell heavily. It's over 100 of the most common discipline questions I get asked. Ages 2 to 18 deals with all of this kind of stuff, from preschool all the way up to driving and dating and smartphones, all of that. Discipline That Lasts a Lifetime. It is on my website. It is discounted, and it is signed. I would highly recommend it. It will give you all kinds of ideas on how to handle the most obstreperous, recalcitrant, pugilistic, and pugnacious preschooler.
Gather with local business professionals for a morning of inspiration at the Archdiocese of Detroit's 32nd Annual Mass for Commerce. Mass will begin at 8 a.m. on Wednesday, October 22nd at Sacred Heart Major Seminary in Detroit, followed by a time of networking over a hot breakfast. A free will offering will be accepted at the event, or you can donate online when you register by clicking the events tab at aod.org. That's aod.org.
The Heart of the Interior Life with Elizabeth Jingle.
Father Jules Toner wrote, "I may easily fail to remember the implicit and most important message in every illumination, impulse, or feeling from the Holy Spirit, namely, that He loves me. We are called to open our hearts to the Holy Spirit, but at times we may not even understand all that is happening in our own hearts. Practicing St. Ignatius of Loyola's 14 Rules for the Discernment of Spirits frees us to be more attentive to what the Holy Spirit is communicating to us, so that we may respond to His direction. When we utilize the 14 Rules for the Discernment of Spirits, our daily decisions are deeply impacted. The Rules of Discernment give practical tools to help us understand God's direction in our life of faith and the pursuit of His will in our everyday spiritual experience. Responding with discerning attentiveness to the promptings of the Holy Spirit is the response of a person of discernment."
For more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net.
Underwritten in part by this not-for-profit.
Hi, this is Mike Ditka.
Hey, this is Brian May.
Hi, I'm Chris Farley. You're listening to The Kevin Matthews Show.
I thought he was insane. A lot of people thought he was insane.
Nobody could touch us. We had 10 million people listening to us a week.
That was my past. If you would have told me I'd be carrying around a broken statue of the Virgin Mary, talking about God, I'd say, are you high?
Broken Mary, The Kevin Matthews Story. In theaters one day only on Tuesday, October 7th. Tickets at BrokenMaryFilm.com.
Time for one last e-person. Dr. Ray, I have been in your audience 3 times. She is referring to the TV show Living Right with Dr. Ray. Listening to your program today, I felt compelled to write you. I get a chuckle when you say to take the kids' electronics away. Now, why is she chuckling? Well, she explains in the next sentence, with capital letters, it is so easy for them to replace these electronics these days. My son is in a small Catholic school. He was internationally adopted and is immature for his age. As a freshman, now this is cut off. I printed it out. It looks like he got a Kindle for Christmas. He had it less than 12 hours. Okay, it must not be a Kindle. Because he was on Facebook comparing body parts with classmates. Phone came as a junior. He misbehaved with it and lost electronics. At one time, Dr. Ray, I had 6 iPhones, an iWatch, 2 iPods, a couple of Bluetooth headphones, a shuffle, I don't know what a shuffle is, and 2 Kindles in a locked safe. The day after he lost an electronic, it was replaced. Well, it wasn't replaced by mom, is what she's saying. What she's saying is all of his friends gave him the old one. And so that's why she felt compelled to chuckle when I said, take that away. That's right. I should put a postscript on that that says, yeah, because his friends and the people who find out that he doesn't have one at age 12 when he's supposed to have one at age 12 say, you shouldn't have to live with those Neanderthal psycho parents. And they feel obliged to save him technologically. Yes, she's right. So, yes, mom says, mom is so tired of the battle with electronics. Yeah, it is. He misused it, obviously. So if you misuse it, you lose it. I mean, that's basic and simple. Because trustworthiness is the factor, not age. Well, okay. It's the more potent factor as they get older is trustworthiness. And you find out that they will replace it with something. One way you could say this is that, you know, you understand that if I catch you replacing this, I shut you down for a month, which means all privilege is gone for a month. Everything. Everything. Favorite hoodie. Outside. Associations with friends. Dessert. Everything. You can read. You can read. You can color. You can do... What's those things we used to do with cards? Built a card house or something? Yeah, you can do that. It's a throwback to the 1955s with your privileges. It's what you can do. I mean, I'm not going to say it's going to work, but at least makes a statement. If you're going to travel around my conditions on this phone, then you're going to risk a lot more stuff. You can do that. But you're absolutely right. You bring out a great point, and many parents, when this happens, they feel like, oh, well, that didn't work. I took his electronics, so what? He just got another one. No, what that does, unfortunately, is make you more vigilant. Now, my guess would be that if you went and you took a poll of 100 experts, the majority of them, if not... perhaps the big majority of them would say, well, you know, you've got to find a compromise here. You've got to let this child at age 13 have this. Only a minority would say, if this is not good for him, if he can't be trustworthy in handling this, he's going to go places, he's going to do things, he's going to start up relationships that are just so risky. If he can't be trusted, then you can't let him have it. No, most experts would say, no, he's going to get too mad. He's going to get resentful. This is the norm now. This is what kids do. Many experts don't have a religious worldview. So for them to say, this hurts this developing child's virtue, would not be relevant. All they're concerned about is him fitting in socially with his peer group, which may be being raised radically different from the way you want him to be raised. Although, I am hopeful that more experts are starting to see the problem with limitless technology. It's coming out all over the place. Stuff's coming out everywhere regarding mental health, regarding academic performance, regarding social restrictions, anxiety, depression. All this stuff's coming out everywhere. So more of them are starting to say, maybe we should rethink some of this. Unlicensed attachment, not good. I'm Dr. Ray. Thank you so much for joining me here on the See Person Monday. God willing, I'll see you tomorrow. Walk with God. You don't need technology to do that.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRRay.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.